Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our good buddy, longtime NHLer, TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin. How you doing, Pooley?
Doing great, Brian. As you say, crazier things have happened, and you're talking about the Jays being in the playoffs in the same sentence.
Yep, that's right.
How do you even separate those two things?
That's kind of difficult, right? They can get conflated pretty easily, I think.
Holy smokes.
Yep, that's for sure.
Oh, it is absolutely crazy, but good to be joining you.
Yeah, it's great to have you, buddy. What do you make of the Cup Final and the Stamkos story last night? How did you, I guess, embrace that whole show last night?
Yeah, it was tremendous. It really was. You know, you're trying to draw some sort of an analogy to anything you've been through, and the closest I came, and Ray actually told the story from his point of view, because Ray was playing for the other team at the time, was bringing Ray Bork back for a game 7 in the Boston Garden after he hadn't played in the series. And we didn't know he was going to skate. He wasn't in the morning skate, hadn't skated at all, and apparently decided to go down to the rink at like 3 o'clock and see how it was feeling, and decided he was ready to go, but he didn't tell any of us. And so we went out for the warm-up, and then he dressed right after that and then came out and joined us late in the warm-up.
What was his injury, Pooley?
It was like a deep thigh contusion, and so he was on crutches, like right up to the time-o. And I remember Ray telling the story, because in the old Boston Garden, you came through the visiting team's end, right, to come on the ice for warm-up. And so, you know, the gates are closed, and Ray's like, great, the gates are all closed, you know, Bork's out. And, you know, all of a sudden, the guys are opening the gate in the middle of their warm-up, and Bork is steaming right through the middle of them. And I just remember the emotional lift from our standpoint, because we really, honestly, guys, did not know he was playing. A little bit different last night with Stamkos. And you know, I had that surgery in 91. I think the same surgery that he had, the core muscle. And honestly, like 2 months before I actually played a game, I thought I was ready to come back. I kept thinking I was ready. So it didn't surprise me that, you know, he was skating but wasn't quite sure. And then when he comes back and, you know, we're doing the game, but unfortunately we're not sitting together and we're doing it. So Owen and I are texting back and forth, and, you know, the other guys are involved. And just when he scores that goal, I think, you know, you're texting as fast as you can. I think there were 5 wows that went out at the exact same time. Oh,
yeah, there was. It's just, yeah. Pooley, are you on board with this not going any further? Like, he just gave it a shot, and nobody can really see him putting a uniform on again. That was his kind of... That was his moment in the Stanley Cup final.
I would not be surprised if he didn't play again at all. And, you know, and I don't mind the thought process either of coming in game 3. It wasn't like he was expected to be the savior. It was probably a perfect time. And as I just told you, I mean, it was literally 2 months for me when I said, yeah, I'd wake up in the morning, yeah, I think I'm ready to go. And then by noon, I'd be like, no, not a chance. And at 4 o'clock, well, I think I'm ready again. And then at 5 o'clock, no, not a chance. So he's been going through that. So I think, you know, the medical opinion would have been, look, you can't hurt yourself anymore. Pick a time to give it a try. Perfect time. The start of game 3, whatever you bring in this, and then also leave yourself some runway. So if you come back and it feels perfect, hey, you know, you can still be a significant factor in this series. And it's pretty clear what he would have brought. We didn't even get there on the power play or see that at all, but... Listen, he could load up on one leg on that power play if it came down to a game 7. So I don't think we'll see him again, but if it got to a game 7-0, I wouldn't be surprised.
With Dave Poulin, so we're less than 2 weeks away from the draft and just over 2 weeks away from free agency. So every other team involved, you know, the other 29, and I guess in a way 30, because Seattle's kind of entering into the league this year in a weird way. They're not going to be playing, but... They're going to be tracking things and putting together a list for the expansion draft a year from now. When it comes to free agents, we've had this discussion. I think the high-end guys are going to get paid and likely get paid quick. I think the lower-end guys, the cheaper guys, will likely go relatively quick too. The mid-level free agents, do you think they're in trouble in terms of what they're hoping for, what they want, and maybe how quickly they get signed?
Absolutely, I do, Brian. They are. They just flat out are. Particularly in term, like I can't see why, if you're a team with the uncertainties involved right now, would you go term on anybody unless you got such a great deal that you said, look, we have to sign this guy for 5 years. The numbers are so good. But you know, if I'm a player now and I'd made some money, so say, you know, I mean, conservatively, you've got guys that have made, what, $30, $40 million that are in the market now. Would you not bet on yourself and go short term and try and win somewhere? And like, you've already got your really nice house and your cottage and your car and your really nice sneakers, and you got some serious dough in the bank. This was going to be your big contract, but it's not going to be, or potentially not going to be. Boy, oh boy, you know, the two guys that did it, Correa and Solani back in 2003, when they both rolled the dice and went to Colorado for the 1 year deals. Like, if I'm an agent advising some of these guys, why not be confident? Pick a team, pick a Colorado, pick a Vegas, pick somebody who's got no money. Go there, you know, get paid your $1 million and bet on yourself for a year. And then re-enter the market in a year or 2 years or 3 years when the money's back, you know, to full swing. And I just think, you know, if everybody's going to complain to me on the management side, there's no money out there, why would I sign a long-term deal if I'm a player at a much lower rate? When, you know, 4 years from now, if there's money back in the market, or 3 years from now, but you got to be confident in yourself too, and confident in your abilities, and confident where you're going. And, you know, it's almost like what these basketball players do. Okay, three of us are going to meet in Miami for lunch, and by the way, we'll stay and play for a couple of years. You know, and we'll win, and then we'll go our separate ways. And I could see that happening more. The other thing I could see, guys, is teams walking away from qualifying offers. I think that's a really understated thing right now, that, you know, if you're not certain about a guy and his qualifying offer is $3 million or $2.5 million, and you're not quite certain about it, and you're not certain what else might be better out there in the market at cheaper, there's going to be some sleepless nights around these dates, the QO date and the UFA date, because as a manager, if you're a manager on the West Coast, you're getting up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. to start to beat the market and see who's going where and who might slip in and who's going to pop free. And I think it's going to be a year. If you're going to symbolize one word, if you're going to pick one word to symbolize the year, I think it will be change.
Pooley, before you came on, we were having a, you know, kind of a debate about if Ottawa wanted to get crazy. And, you know, they've got the two picks, they've got some young players coming, and, you know, Hayes said if they wanted to throw some money at some players, they could shape their team pretty nicely, I would imagine. And I got a little crazy saying, well, I've got two moves for you. Sign Markstrom to term, and there you got your goaltender, and offer sheet Cirelli. Now, I may have overstepped because I'm not sure if you believe he's a one or a two. O thinks he's a two. Hayes thinks he's a two. I think he's a bit of a hybrid. Well, I think he's a bit of a hybrid, but I think he's a 25-goal guy. Like, he had 16 goals last year in 68 games and 44 points. Like, I think he's going to be a 50-point guy for sure. But do you believe there's going to be a maybe an offer sheet or two that a team, you know, could be targeting just based on this market? You know, a guy like Bergevin does it again. If Ottawa wants to get crazy, you know, it seems like if you want to spend money, you may be able to do it in this marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Cirelli's a one or will ever be a one offensively. He'd be actually a lower end two for me, like a really good defensive guy. I don't think you're going to get the offense even that, you know, you get from a really good two. But boy, oh boy, that's the player and that's the team, because they're going to be in an unbelievable squeeze. And, you know, it's the old, I was thinking about this because the last kind of not mid-level, but young player to get offer sheeted, was it not Ryan Kessler way back when in Vancouver?
Aho did last year, didn't he?
No. Yeah. But I mean the lower level guy. Oh, like I think he got offer sheeted by Philly at like $1.9 million
or
something.
It was 1.9, yeah.
Yeah, which was, you know, coming out of an entry level deal back then was significant. But so not the Staro, not the Ahos, not those guys, mm-hmm. but the lower tier guys who are on cap teams, and I haven't, you know, I'm just digging into the cap situations now, but Vegas has to have one or two of those guys, don't
right,
they?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
That's coming out, so say he's coming out and whatever his RFA position is, and you go to $2.8 million or something to that effect, where it's not going to cost you a lot, but believe me, these teams don't have $200,000 to spend, some of these teams that are so tight against it, let alone $2 million or $2.8 million. So I think that's where, you know, I'm back to the RFA side of it. Not only teams not qualifying, but who's a really good young player like that? And Cirelli would be right in that wheelhouse for me.
Quickly, before we let you go, what about the Leafs? What plan of attack do you expect to see out of them for the next 2 weeks?
You know, I don't see the Petrangelo thing going, guys. I just don't. I've hit those numbers really, really hard. Unless you're changing your team and changing your philosophy dramatically. And if you're doing those things, you can do anything you want. But the numbers just flat out don't work. And, you know, they just don't. I mean, you're compressed so much. Right now, you know, you have three defensemen signed that are going to play in the NHL next year, for sure. Jake Muzzin, Morgan Rielly, and Justin Hall. And, guys, I think Justin Hall is a 5'6". Like, he's typecast
so
as a 3'4".
Yep.
Right.
He's not a 3'4". He's not. And so now, you know, just pure numbers, I had them at $9.3 million with nine forwards signed, three defensemen, and two goalies. Now, that doesn't include Mikhaev, and it doesn't include Dermott. And $9.3 million, like, that's what you've got left. So you're talking some dramatic, dramatic change in order to make things happen. And if that's the case, you know, Kyle Dubas so far has been unwavering in the way he thinks he wants to build a hockey team and in his philosophy. And he's really stuck to it, guys. He hasn't wavered from it. I don't see him wavering now in order to restructure his entire group.
Always appreciate it, Pooley. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's Maple Toyota's birthday, and they're giving you the gifts this month. Buy any new vehicle and receive a free gift. Red tag savings continue with rates from 0%. Yeah, I do think it's kind of an existential moment here for Dubas because, you know, the three guys, the big guys at the top aren't going anywhere, I don't think.
Right.
You know, Matthew's not going anywhere. Tavares not going anywhere. And I don't think Marner's going anywhere. But, you know, Nylander, whether you believe that he guaranteed him or promised him he wouldn't trade him or not, I don't know if that's true. I don't know how you could possibly expect that to continue for your whole career, even if you are a very good player like William Nylander. But the numbers right now don't add up for Petrangelo and filling out your roster. But that doesn't mean you can't make that work if you start getting crazy with shipping out other players. Right, like if you bring in, and even just with Nylander alone, and I know people are very sensitive to it because his name's always up, but if you look at it like a four-year window, which is what Matthews has left, and what Nylander has left. Nylander's got 4 years left, then he's a UFA. He might walk, right? Yeah. He may leave. That would be his right. He can do whatever he wants. If you're looking at a four-year window where you feel like you've got to win a cup or compete for a cup now, who do you think is going to have a bigger impact on your team over 4 years? Alex Petrangelo or William Nylander?
I think that's an obvious question, don't
exactly.
you? Exactly. Petrangelo.
Of course it is. So
it
that's
is.
The point. So if you can get him, and that means you've got to move money out, and it's got to be Nylander for other pieces or for cap relief plus, you know, picks, prospects, whatever it might be, that is a philosophy that would make sense in terms of building your hockey team.
Agreed.
And that's, as a GM, you have to think like that. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Petrangelo might sign with St. Louis tomorrow. But if he's there on October 9th and he says, I'm interested and I'll come for this, that, or the other, and you think we can make that work if we do this, that, or the other, then you're talking drastic change, right? Like it has to be just based on the cap. You don't want to. Why would you want to trade very good players or move on from very good players? No one wants to do that.
Well,
it's
I
not
like
personal.
The way you look at it there. What guy's going to bring you the most in the next 4 or 5 years? Or 3 or 4 years.
4 years. That's, it's a four-year Austin Matthews bubble. You know, that's what it is. He's
wheelhouse,
got 4 years
yeah.
left. That wheelhouse, 4 years. Who knows what happens beyond that? Willie's got 4 years left on his deal. So you got 4 years. That's your window. You got to win a cup or at least compete for one and go kind of all in at that point for 4 years. Who is going to put you in the best position to win a cup in the next 4 years? That is how Kyle Dubas has to be thinking right now. What do I have to do? And if you got to get ruthless, you got to get ruthless.
Well,
talk to Masai Ujiri about that.
Absolutely. But it's not even about being ruthless. It's about, you know, understanding where your team is at and where you believe you can take them. I, I, I think Kyle wants to build a contender that's there every year with this group, which is fine. And I think every manager is trying
garbage,
to do that.
Jamie,
I understand
being there
that.
Every year. That just anybody that says that, it's just a crock of absolute garbage because things happen. You can't be there every year.
But
it's just,
okay,
you can be good every year, but you're not going to be there every year, as we saw with Tampa Bay last year. It's just you got to try to put the best team out every year. To say you want to build something long term, it's just not possible in today's sports.
But the Washington Capitals, for example, were very good for a long time, and what they did was shape around you commit to your core, and then you find who works in a particular year for that group. And I think that's what he's trying to do. But getting back to what Brian's saying at some point, to make the numbers work, you may have to throw somebody from that core overboard to make it work. And obviously everyone's like, well, William Nylander's the easy choice. For me, it's not easy because he's a very good player, but I don't see him as super elite. I just see him as a really good player. So that's what makes it maybe a little bit easier than looking at Marner's scenario or Tavares' scenario.
And this is also a different context, right? Like, there's always been a battle in the marketplace about every single player. And Nylander may be more polarizing than the other guys. How people feel about him, what they want to see out of him, what they love about him.
The apologists in this market about him, it's gross.
There are a lot of people that go over the top and I think overemphasize his actual production and ability.
Yeah.
But there are also people on the other end that think he sucks or something, which is equally as ludicrous. He's a very good player. But the difference with this context, if it is aligned to Pietrangelo, what makes this difference different is before it was, well, Nylander can't work here, or I don't like Nylander.
Right.
It has nothing to even do with Nylander. It would have everything to do with who you're adding to the core, which is Alex Pietrangelo. It's improving your team, and as a result, something else has to happen. So it's not, you know, we've turned on Willie, or the media ran him out of town. No, that's not what would be happening here. It would be simply, look at how good of a player we can get here. So now we have to make a really tough decision.
Yep.
And as a result, because of the numbers and because of the cap was looser. If there was no cap, this wouldn't be an issue. But there is. It's a hard cap, and there's going to be no flexibility for the next 2 or 3 years. So how do you build the best possible team to go after? It would be ideal if you go after 4 Cubs, but not realistic. Can you get 1 in the next 4 years? What team can you put together that is going to give you the best chance of winning a Cub? Right. Over the next 4 years. And that's for Kyle Dubas to figure out. You know, that's his job. But it better not be based on loyalty. It better not be based on promises made or I like this guy or I drafted that guy. Again, Masai Ujiri put forth the blueprint. Things have to change every once in a while. Tough decisions have to be made. Relationships have to be broken off. Feelings are going to get hurt. But are we in this to just feel good and clap in the stands and see a team that gets knocked out in the first round every year? Or do you want to win something? That's what you got to ask yourself.
Yeah. And O brought it up. Like, it's the Masai Ujiri. You brought it up, Brian. Like, you got to be ruthless. Like, if it's...
Yeah, you tell a guy you're going to be there as long as I'm there, maybe that's not the case.
Maybe Pietrangelo, like, very different player, very
it's
different
like
game.
Kawhi?
Maybe he's the Kawhi. Guess what? He came available, so things had to change. And he said he'd be willing to come here, and he's exactly what we need, and he's more impactful than this player, that player, the other player. So our plan changed, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, plans change. You have to make adjustments on the fly. And this is not a team that can feel overly confident about the situation that they're currently in. I think they can feel confident in a lot of their group. Like, they still have talent. They're a playoff team. Right, they're not a disaster or anything like that. But they can't feel like Tampa feels right now, right?
No,
or
no.
Even like Vegas might feel right now, or Colorado might feel like there are teams that they're chasing, Boston, Washington, etc., that are also going to try to improve. So, you know, let's see.
I agree.
Let's see where it takes us.